AAT Bird's weekly report is the Eagle News, notes, and analysis you need.
Fires for the end zone. Intercepted! Intercepted!
The 30, the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown! Matt Ware! Matt Ware! Midfield!
He steps up, he's hit, and falls forward. And he fumbles the football, and the Eagles have it!
It's gone! And the Eagles win!
It's all Birds. All the time.
And welcome to another edition of the AT Birds Weekly Report. I myself, Johnny Leca, is joined finally again by Kendall at Quebec Eagles. We're going to get into the training camp. It's been a little bit over a week of training camp for the Eagles. Get into some surprises, some disappointments maybe. I want to kind of get Kendall's thoughts on this training camp going into the preseason with a couple things. And we're going to talk about the Kelly Green. I see Kendall is sporting his Kelly Green hoodie there, a little throwback there. They're back. And I want to kind of talk a little bit about that because there was a lot with that, whether it's the Eagle social media throwing a little bit of some shade at the fans, you know, teasing them a little bit. And then all of a sudden it gets, it gets released before it's supposed to get released and all that good stuff. But I want to talk a little bit about that because it is an iconic jersey. It's an iconic color. We've been asking for it for years. But Kendall, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back. Excited to be back, talk some ball, ready for the season to start. Training camp is finally here, and we're already, 2 weeks in now? So season's going to be here before you know it.
Adam, check in with him. Adam. Yeah, it's interesting. Because when you look at all around across the league, and you and I mentioned it, and I want to bring it up first, when you're looking at this team, the big thing is you look at all the young players and everything, but it's the injuries. We've seen it with a couple of teams and some pretty well-known players getting hurt. Now, some not out for the season, but you saw Joe Burrow get hurt. Kalijah Kancey for Tampa Bay gets hurt. You saw Tim Patrick, unfortunately, go down with another Achilles injury. You know, stuff like that does happen. And I think I've mentioned it multiple times. I know you've said it too. It's the injury bug. The Eagles have been really lucky the last couple of seasons when it comes to, you know, injuries. And you're not going to be immune to it. You're going to have injuries. So for me, looking at this, I'm hoping you can kind of avoid the major injuries like they have the last couple of seasons, because depth wise, you want to be okay going into the season. But what are your take on all these injuries and everything that's kind of going on?
Yeah, I feel like the Eagles staff has done a really good job past couple of years of like just resting players and not like being overload in practice. We've seen it the past 2 years with Sirianni. He pretty much emphasizes rest and taking care of your health. And I think that's a big part of why we saw all 22 starters in the Super Bowl last year. Sometimes you can't control injuries, like Achilles injuries are, yeah. It can literally just happen off the jump. So very fortunate there hasn't been any injuries yet, but from the sounds of it, camp has been going well and everything is happening the way you want it. So I'm not going to that.
And that's the biggest thing when you look at camp and, you know, Jalen Hurts, you know, looking like he did last year. And that's one thing that you want to see. You want to see him take that step up in his performance. And hopefully we see that. But all in all, looking at some of these guys, some of these surprises that I happen to see was I saw Kayvon Wallace getting some reps with the first team. You saw Quez Watkins, you know, talking about he's an elite receiver, you know, maybe trying to pump himself up a little bit. But I think the biggest thing was the Kayvon thing. I don't know if they're just kind of holding the rookies, putting them on the second, third teams to kind of get themselves acclimated. I know they have done that before. Guys like Jalen Carter, though, is playing a little bit more on the the first team, first, second teams. But, you know, a guy like Kayvon Wallace, this is his time, because if he can't do it, I'm not sure he makes the roster. And yes, he's a valuable special teams player. And the Eagles did work out DeAndre Houston Carson as well. And yeah, they signed Justin Evans and they signed Terrell Edmonds. And, you know, you have these, they drafted Sidney Brown. So, you know, Kayvon Wallace, this is his time. If he wants to show up to be able to take that to the next level in training camp and in the preseason games, because we really haven't seen it yet. And, you know, it's a shame because I thought he was going to be a certain type of player, but of course we have not seen that yet.
Yeah. I mean, I think since last training camp, I kind of figured Kayvon's time was done, but I do think there's like a legit chance he has like a role in this defense, because I think he's what they want Terrell Edmonds to be. I think they're going to be using two safeties, but I think the strong safety is going to be more just in the box and pretty much just like a linebacker, which is why I don't think they're desperate for, like, you know, for linebacker. That would be a great one. Yeah. Kayvon was phenomenal last year coming in for Chauncey when he went down. I think he obviously lacks some traits to be like a high level starting safety, but if you can just leave him down there, you know, between the tackles and make plays and force fumbles, I think you can get away with that. And then with also Sean Desai, with new scheme, you kind of want just veterans who are familiar with just like what they want exactly. These rookies are underdeveloped. They aren't really adjusted to the game fully. So I think we're going to see a lot of Kayvon early this year, especially if Edmonds isn't really bringing what they want. I know they're both pretty physical, but I think Kayvon has more of that big pop potential. So I think they're comfortable with what they have right now. And Reed Blankenship, I think he's going to be – I don't think he's getting enough attention in regards of, like, could have a big season. Everyone's saying, oh, go get Buda Baker, blah, blah, blah. No, I think you have to give Reed a shot until he – proves otherwise. And so we'll see what happens, but I just think Reed Blankenship and then with the mixture of Edmonds and Wallace is going to be fine just for the time being.
And you look at the secondary and you look at, you know, I go and I look at the cornerback position, and it's a lot deeper than it was last year. And you still have Slay and Bradbury, of course. You got Greedy Williams, you have Josh Job. You know, you have, of course, your slot cornerbacks with Zach McPherson moving to play slot with Avontae, and you have Josiah Scott. And then you look at the young players, and you look at a guy like, can't think of his name now.
Josh Job.
No, I said Josh Job. Can't think of his, Keely Ringo.
It was
not popping in my head.
There's many names we could probably go for days.
Yeah, I know. When it comes to training camp, you have the 90-man roster, but you have a guy like Keely Ringo, who basically is almost like it's a red shirt year, if you really think about it, because who do you have on the roster? You know, you have what, maybe six corners that are going to make the team out of the 53. And they have a whole, you're going to let go of some high quality players that you can hope can make it to your practice squad. And I think that there are some positions like that. And I know you talked about Buda Baker. My feeling is, I think I'm talking about the position. If they make a move in the position on defense, it's going to be linebacker, in my opinion, getting a veteran. I know a player that you talked about, Quan Alexander, did just recently sign.
That's tough to see.
Yeah. So, with the Pittsburgh Steelers, I believe, but like that would be one for me because you have Nakobe Dean. We really don't know with Nakobe what he is. He is still young, a second year player, didn't play all that much last year. You have a guy like Nick Morrow who did play for, Chicago and did play a lot, last couple of seasons with the Raiders in Chicago. But, you know, for me, looking at those two guys, but then you have Christian Ellis and then Davion Taylor. And the depth just isn't there. Christian Ellis is a really good special teamer. You know, does he maybe fill out a role like a TJ Edwards did after a couple seasons with the Eagles, getting a chance to finally get better? I don't know that, but I think that is where you could see a veteran added. I don't think safety really at this point now, after, you know, going out and getting, you know, two players and, you know, veterans in Evans and Edmonds, you know, having Reed Blankenship there, drafting Sidney Brown. I just don't think there's a spot to add a big level safety, in my opinion. I think it's linebacker, getting a veteran, you know, not getting a star player or a player that's going to cost you a ton of money or a ton of, you know, assets or picks or anything like that. But looking at maybe getting a veteran who's either on the last year of his contract or a veteran that gets cut or a veteran that's on the market right now. I think that's where you look at, because right now it's unknown what you have.
There's not too many, like, everyone knows that Howie Rosen likes to sign guys who have a year left in their deal. Not too many, like, established safeties that have a year left in their contract, like Chauncey was last year. I mean, Chauncey's available, obviously. He's still going to stay in Detroit. I think what it comes down to is Nicholas Morrow, which he's had a okay camp. He hasn't been great in coverage from what I've heard, or from what I saw from reports. I think if he can't be competent and he can't bring you what you need, and then I think that's when they pivot to looking for, you know, somebody who's available in the trade market or a free agent. I really wanted to see Quan Alexander sign, because I think he's a very physical, and, you know, he's not great, you know, as a pass coverage linebacker, but he's really good making tackles. But Christian Ellis has been phenomenal from what we've heard during training camp and OTAs. He seems pretty good all around, you know, as a pass cover and a tackler. We haven't heard much from Nakobe, but I don't know what their options really are. And I think they're kind of also at a stalemate of, like, trying to figure out what they can do. So, and then as for the corners, like, there's so many guys that, like you said, they're going to leave. There's going to be at least three guys who don't make the roster, who I'm willing to bet either sign with a team, or the Eagles won't be able to get them to their practice squad. Because, like, someone like Mekhi Garner, apparently, like, yesterday he had, like, one of the biggest hits they've seen in camp for a long time. And so, or like Eli Ricks, Mario Goodrich has been getting reps in this slot as a first team corner. So they have a lot of guys they want, and they don't have the spots for it, because defensive ends are really crowded. They're going to need to keep a couple wide receivers, like Britton Covey, even though he's just a specialist, really. He's going to be counted as a wide receiver. So even like a lineman, you know how they keep linemen to develop. Linemen. So they're having some tough decisions to make, and it's going to come down just to pretty much in preseason how these guys perform.
And I think another thing, and you're looking at the offensive line, you know, bringing up, you know, linemen in the offensive line too, is, you know, Cam Jurgens getting that first nod at right guard. You know, him and Tyler Steen seem to be the two guys. I know Driscoll has played on the right side.
I think it's Jurgens' job. I don't think he's going to lose it. I don't even think it's competition anymore, based off how camp has gone the first 5 days.
Yeah, it's Jurgens' job to lose. And if he's able to, you know, take control of that, you know, then you get your second round pick from last year on the field, and he's not sitting on the bench again, as your all-pro center is still in the league and still playing. When you look at the offensive line and how amazing the offensive line is and what you have up front there. And then you look at the veterans, they did sign, you know, we mentioned it last episode. They did sign Dennis Kelly, a swing offensive line, veteran offensive line, when he comes back to the Eagles. I think that's something that I wanted them to do. I wanted them to get a veteran who can play multiple positions, but also has been in the league a while, because, you know, for me, that helps the offensive line, because it's tough when you have somebody go out and you have to rely on a super young guy who really hasn't done it before. And something like the Eagles always like to have those type of players who can play multiple positions and who are a veteran. You know, it helps them out. Dennis Kelly really hasn't played awful. You know, he's not a all-pro,
he's definitely competent
player, but he's a decent, he's a solid player, rotational player to come in there. And I think that's great. Having Driscoll, you know, those type of guys, I think is pivotal, and it's key for the offensive line.
And, like, he can play both. Like, he could play if he had to, he could play all three positions, center, guard, and tackle. Like, he's very versatile. And that was, like, a big emphasis during the Eagles Super Bowl year in 2017. Like, Stefan Wisniewski, like, he wasn't supposed to be the guy, but, you know, they needed him, and he kind of filled the void. And, you know, he performed well, and they don't have him. Like, who knows what that offensive line looks like and the protection for her, for Foles back then. And so I think Dennis Kelly is kind of fills that same role. And another comparison I thought about earlier was the running backs compared to the 2017 team. Like, last year, this is obviously like kind of like Miles Sanders is like offense. Obviously you splash and Kenny Gainwell and whatnot, but like this year's, it's going to be a completely different like backfield. You're going to have Swift, you're going to have Penny, you're going to have Gainwell, and who knows, maybe even Sermon gets some looks. Like, all these guys, they're going to be feeding everybody. And this is just not like one person's offense. Back in 2017, when he won the Super Bowl, it was Clement, it was Ajayi, it was Blunt. And before Sproles got hurt, he was even in there. So, like, I think they're going to use Swift very versatile. They're going to use, you know, Rashad for like a Blunt role. And then, you know, with Gainwell, very similar to like Sproles and Clement, you know, out of the backfield, third down situations. So, I think this backfield has so much potential, and especially with this offensive line, with how deep it is, I think the only thing that's going to be limiting the running back's ceiling is just themselves and injuries.
And that's a good comparison. I didn't really think about the 2017 team when you're looking at this running back group. That is a really good comparison because it does kind of line up with a couple of the different guys that they had on the squad and able to do different things. And I'm really interested to see how they use a guy like DeAndre Swift. Do they get more creative with running back out of the backfield, throwing to the backs, you know, doing that kind of stuff? Because I feel if they're able to, you know, get that going and to be able to do that with this offense and the way that the offense was last year, it just gives you another dimension to the offense and just kind of puts it on that extra level. And that's pretty dangerous to think about, because when you look at this offense and look at the playmakers and look at everything, if you can make the offense go to another level when it's already towards the top, if you know, towards the top in the league, is pretty crazy and pretty scary when you look at opposing defenses that have to account and cover these different playmakers and these different things that they're able to do.
And I feel like last year, obviously we didn't see enough of, you know, the running back catching the ball. But like even like the screens, I feel like we saw like more screens from Goddard than we did like, you know, or from Quez, the outside guys, than we did running backs. Like that was a big Doug Peterson play, like screens for running backs, and it never really failed because it was kind of predictable and didn't really use it well in situations. But I think that's what Sirianni and Brian Johnson are going to try to do, is mix in those running back screens, running backs out in the flats, because that's only going to help improve your offense, and it's going to force defenses to be more disciplined. So I think Sirianni's mindset's going to be, as a running back, with the exception of probably Penny, is you have to catch the ball in this offense. And if you can't do that, you're not going to be seeing the field. So,
yeah, and I think another thing is when you look at a player like Rashad Penny and his health, if he's able to stay healthy, that's another, you know, dynamic playmaker being able to do something, because his yards per carry is through the roof when you look at all the other backs and his size and, you know, what he can do when he hits the hole. That's, again, another thing that is very tantalizing when you look at this offense. And I don't know, it's just, yeah, you don't hear a lot with camp. Of course, camp, you got to take a little bit with a grain of salt too, because you know, a lot of people like to, you know, take tidbits from here and there and think everything. I like the practices when they're able to do the practices with the other teams. I feel like you get a lot more out of that, almost like a pseudo preseason type of atmosphere.
Joint practices are going to be the new normal within like probably next year. I'm willing to bet next year we're probably going to have maybe one preseason game per team. There's just no point in having a three. I'm willing to bet like this year, this time last year, I'd say like maybe like half the league was doing joint practices. Now you look at it, it's like almost every single team.
Yeah. And really, what are you going to see the Eagles players maybe play a series and that's about it, like they did last year?
It's
all in all, it's just, you know, the younger guys, maybe they're able to show something, to put some, you know, tape out there, to maybe either get picked up by another team, make the practice squad, make the roster. You know, for me, you know, looking at that, I agree with you. When it looks at the preseason games, I could see maybe just two, maybe not one, but maybe just two, knocking one more off and just doing two. Because I do think it is a little beneficial for the younger guys able to get reps. I know in during practices, you really don't get that. And yeah, practices, you get some reps, but I feel like the live game atmosphere reps against other guys, I think that's where the preseason games are beneficial for them. But for the starters and guys that you know are going to make the team, really preseason games, if you have a guy out there way too long, it's a risk, because if someone gets a major injury, then you have a problem. Right. Now, of course, they can get a major injury in practice and everything there too, but I don't know. I think two would be the only one. What do you think of, I know I've seen it a couple of times, the Nick Sirianni fired up, getting real fired up at these guys, yelling at them, everything. I have something that I thought about when I saw that and seeing what he's doing, not to be kind of complacent, not to be, it's almost like after they won the Super Bowl, it just seemed like Doug kind of got too comfortable. And when you do that, you let your guard down and you're able to kind of, the players just kind of have at it at their own pace and do it at their own pace. And then again, you look at the last number of seasons Doug was here. So you look at 18 and 19. Now I'm not counting 20 because 20 was an absolute train wreck, but you look at 2018 and 2019, they started the season very slow and then had to pick it up and basically almost went out, if not went out, to make a playoff spot. And I feel like what Sirianni is doing is letting these guys know from the jump, we're not going to be complacent. Yeah. We're not going to think that teams are just going to roll over. And I feel like that's a great message that he's sending to these guys.
Yeah, if people don't realize by now, they know it now. Like, it's everything Nick Sirianni does is calculated. Like, when we saw, like, the first thing of practice, like, reporters are putting out about how Sirianni, like, teed off on the receivers or the offense for being sloppy, like, sure, you know, that's annoying as a coach, but it's like you're not, like, emphasizing your frustration like that off rip. Like, that's calculating. You're doing that just to keep these guys like, hey, like, no more fucking around. Like, what happened last year happened, but we're not going to let it happen again. And I think that probably comes from, like, the front office too. I think Howie probably, you know, was given the same message, because once, like you said about Doug getting comfortable after 2017, I'm sure Wentz was the same way. And that's what's kind of, like, different about Hurts, is, like, this man's always, like, trying to win. He doesn't want to be, like, he doesn't want to be settled for less. So Sirianni's definitely doing this intentionally. I hope it doesn't come across as, you know, BS from the players. But, you know, at some point he's probably got to take it back a little bit and realize, hey, like, you know, we got to forget about last year and got to focus on what's going on this year. I think to tail off that, I think my biggest concern going into the season, and biggest, I don't want to say concern, but just like skeptical situation to monitor, is Brian Johnson and Sean Desai. I don't know if these guys are fully capable of controlling, you know, an offense or a defense. It's going to be a big test for them, probably even in the preseason, just to get in the game flow of things, you know what I mean? I think Brian Johnson has learned a lot from being in college. He's called plays in Florida. I'm sure Sean Desai, he's called plays before, but it's about getting used to the flow and then making the adjustments like Shane Slickin did last year, or Jonathan Gannon, which he never really made adjustments. So, but you get the point. So I think those are the biggest question marks going into this season.
No, and you're right with that. It is very interesting to see what these guys are going to have and what they're going to be able to put out there. I think that's a great thing. And I posted, I think it was about maybe 2 weeks ago, it was Lewis Reddick was talking on one of the ESPN shows.
Yeah, I think I saw a video
about top quarterbacks, and mentioned about Jalen Hurts, and then the familiarity.
Guys.
And it makes sense too, because the one thing about Brian Johnson is, yes, he's new offensive coordinator, but him and Jalen Hurts has known each other forever. And I think that's very good to already have, is that familiarity between the two. It's not a new, a guy just learning this, another guy. Already kind of know each other. He was already in the building. I think that's big. I think the defensive side of the ball is what's going to be a little bit different. Let's see what Sean Desai can do. I am very interested to see what he does with the defense, how he lines up the corners. Do they play a little bit press? Do they play zone, but do they hit their ceiling? What they do, blitzing, or the types of schemes, how they run. Do they do a 5-1 set? Do they do 5-2? Do they do, different things? How many corners, how many safeties? That's all going to be interesting. And of course, we're not really going to know until the first game of the season. No team really shows what they do in the preseason. But I think Sean Desai, to me, Sean Desai's more of what are we going to get with him at calling this defense and running this defense. Not that I am worried about it, but I'm intrigued to see what he does and see if he can elevate this team defensively, which is, pretty big to say when you basically had a team record, almost an NFL record in sacks, and you were able to make it all the way to the Super Bowl. So let's see what he does in the offensive side of the ball. I think I'm okay as of right now, because you still have Nick in there. And you still have some of the other guys who were there, Kevin Petullo, you have Brian Johnson, you have some of the guys already in place there. So I think it's the Sean Desai aspect that I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does.
I think we're probably going to see growing pains the most probably from Desai, only because Brian Johnson was here last year. He has a good idea what Sirianni wants as tempo-wise and schematically. I think he's going to bring a lot more creativity in terms of just not being this complacent. I don't mean to bring up Gannon, but last year he settled a lot and would fail to make adjustments. I think Desai is going to look to get creative, show different fronts, because they have the bodies to do that. They have so many different, athletic defensive tackles or, defensive ends, or even the secondary is pretty deep and, versatile. So I think it's about getting over the growing pains, and it's going to happen. They're going to have growing pains start the season, and people are going to be oh my God, get Desai out of here. But it's this is a new team for him. These are a bunch of new players for him. He's got to adjust and got to give him time. Now, if we're sitting here in week 10 and we still have questions, that's an issue, because there's too many talented guys to be having questions. So you just hope to see that things don't get so bad where it spirals out of hand.
No, you're right there. So last week we talked about some type of predictions that we have. I kind of want to get your prediction for whether it's preseason, training camp. What's one thing that you think is going to happen? Whether a player is going to get cut that you don't think, whether a player is going to jump that you don't think. What would you say is your prediction?
I got a bunch of them.
Go ahead, lay them out. We can talk about them.
So I think the Eagles are going to be carrying, this is a hot take, but I think they're going to be carrying a lot of corners into week one. I think some of those guys are just so athletically gifted that you just can't let them hit the market. I wouldn't be surprised. You have Slay, Bradbury, Maddox, Ringo. McPherson is probably going to make it. Job's probably going to make it. And then from there, I wouldn't be surprised if a Mekhi Gardner or a Mario Goodrich, he's been getting, first team reps in the slot. I wouldn't be surprised if they carry seven into the season. Same could be said the opposite of linebackers. I wouldn't be surprised if they walked in with three, maybe even four. You sign Davion Taylor to practice squad, you promote him during game day. And then, I mean, as in regards of structure of the roster and what can happen. I mean, Howie's always making moves before the season starts. I think he's has like over like 15 plus like preseason trades since getting back as a full-time GM. He's going to make a move, whether it's a big time splash.
Yeah, which I agree with you.
Is possible with, you know, cap wise, but I don't know who that would be, or, you know, signing a free agent that can benefit the offense. Howie's going to 100% do something. It's just a matter of when, and when's probably very much going to be like after the preseason game, or maybe after the second one, once they have a pretty good idea of joint practices and when they see the tape against preseason of maybe where their weaknesses are. And then you want like an in-season prediction, or just like,
you don't have to do an in-season, cause we could do that later. During after the preseason stuff, more of a kind of like a training camp going into the preseasons or something that we can say. You don't have to do anything in season yet until we'll wait until maybe the end of this month to do that. That's more of a in line of doing more in season type of predictions. But no, so
one more thing I want to bring up is in terms of like the roster is the defensive ends. Like, they are so deep that like it's almost like they're deeper than they are corners, which is like crazy to think about. Because so you have Graham, you have Sweat, you have obviously Hassan, and then you have like guys like Barnett, Janarius Robinson, Patrick Johnson, who I think he filled in for Barnett last year, and I think he's a great Sam. Like, what are you going to do with those guys? Like, they have tough decisions to make also on the defensive end. And I wouldn't be surprised if like we see Quez get moved because of they want to open a spot, you know, let's say at defensive end or corner. Obviously if Quez has a really good camp, you know, we've heard how he's been making plays in day three and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't love him necessarily, but if you get something for him and you like these on receivers you have with obviously Smitty and AJ and whoever else, you move him and you keep an extra corner or extra defensive end.
No, and I think the one thing is you talk about those corners, and one name that popped into my head that you can easily see them maybe getting rid of, especially if they like these young guys, is Greedy Williams.
I don't think he makes the roster, I'm going to be honest.
You know, just – I think the only way he makes the roster is if there's some injuries and you have to keep a veteran. But just for me, looking at the roster, I like the signing when they did it. You know, he has the tools. He's just never been able to really stay fully healthy for the Browns.
Yeah.
But when you look at you drafting Keely Ringo is not going anywhere. They traded assets to get him because they viewed him as a top, you know, first, second round type of talent. You know, yeah, the undrafted guys that they brought in, but more when you look at the undrafted from last year, Josh Drobe really made an effort. He played a lot of special teams, but he's been on the roster. This is his second year now. So, you know, for me, I think he gets a look as well.
You don't make a roster as a undrafted free agent by coincidence. Like, they have to really like you in order to keep you around. So,
you're right. And they've had some really good luck when you look at undrafted free agents and signing guys and then being able to turn them into, you know, quality players. Again, I always say that you can't think every single player is going to be an all pro and an all, right. You know, a pro bowler. It's just not the way it is. But if players do their jobs, they can make an impact. And right. I think a guy like TJ Edwards made a hell of an impact. Look at the contract he got and look what he did. You look at a guy. Now, Marcus Epps wasn't an undrafted free agent, but they claimed him off waivers. He was a sixth-round pick for the Vikings. They claimed him off waivers, and he turned himself into something. So, Reed Blankenship from last year.
Yeah, the Eagles have been, like very good at, like, having undrafted free agents. I think I had trying to figure out a tweet I put out, I think, in, like, April or it was March, Like, they've said, like, TJ Edwards, Marcus Epps, Boston Scott, Alex Singleton, Reed Blankenship. Yeah. Like who else? They have a bunch of names that they've gotten a lot of work out of from undrafted guys. And
you can even look at, you know, in past years, in prior years, recently, a guy like Corey Clement, he undrafted free agent, make big plays in a Super Bowl. You know, you have these type of players,
Nate Herbig,
that you're able to get quality, you know, play out of and quality reps and be able to do those type of things, which is key. It's huge. And, you know, you don't see it all the time. Not every undrafted free agent is going to be, you know, a good player for you. It's never like that. But I just think that you look at these guys, especially some of these corners, the Eli Ricks, the Mekhi Garners, you know, Goodrich, and then you still have Josh Jobe. These guys able to make some plays, especially when you look into training camp, going into the preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very key when you look at guys like Greedy Williams or Josiah Scott, you know, stuff like that. Because if Zach McPherson can show that he can be a capable slot corner, which I feel is best where he's best suited, you know, you're going to have some competition there as well. So that's going to be one group I cannot wait to watch, because there's so much talent. And I think there's so much untapped potential when you look at some of these guys. So for me, I'm really interested to see that. But aside from the camp talk, I want to get into the last segment I want to talk about.
And one more thing about camp.
No, go ahead.
So I guess a surprise, I guess, would be like a true surprise to all of us, I think, would be like the Eagles being sellers in the preseason. Because once you have all these guys, all these bodies, there's going to be a need elsewhere. And if, like, again, like Greedy Williams, I don't think he makes the roster, but I'm sure there's going to be somebody out there who a corner gets hurt. Like, you know, Ramsey just got hurt. They signed Eli Apple. If someone gets hurt, they're going to need an insurance policy. And then let's say like a team is in win now mode, you'd be willing to give up that pick for, you know, again, Greedy Williams isn't, you know, necessarily a grade A starter, but he's at least competent enough to fulfill the void. So, or a Derek Barnett, who, you know, first round pick, he's had.
He did recently just restructure his contract too. So it kind of saved him a little bit.
That might have been a bad example, only just because they're probably only doing this to help them. But like, you know, but or someone like Patrick Johnson, I don't know. But
you're right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're willing to sell rather than bring in during the deadline.
And they've done it before. So it's not like they've never done that. It is smart. You know, you saw today, I saw the Pittsburgh Steelers put Corey Trice, their seventh round draft pick, who, you know, they were really had high hopes for. They put him on IR, got carted off the field. So you'll have players getting hurt. And if there's a need somewhere that you're able to trade someone for a late round pick, you got something out of somebody we're just going to cut anyway. So now that's a good tidbit. I do think that that is something that they would do, but brings me back to what I was saying was the Eagles have brought back the Kelly Greens. The Kelly Greens are released. Now they were released on Sunday. They were leaked and, you know, we got to see this picture and everything. They were released, leaked out, but I will say, they absolutely hit a home run here with this, because it isn't like the 2010, you know, the 1960 Kelly Green.
Yeah, it's different.
This is the Kelly Green from the 80s and 90s. And
it is different. You
know, every detail they have.
Like the Nike swoosh, perfect.
Yeah. You know, the gray pants with the socks with the stripes. You have the nice big white eagle bird on the side. You know, I think they hit a home run here. Now they're playing it against the one thing that I'm kind of not too happy with is they're playing against the Dolphins. Now I like the Dolphins on Sunday night in primetime. That's fine. But then they're playing the Bills. I would have thought they would have played an NFC East opponent, whether it's Washington, whether it's the Giants or the Cowboys. Now they're only wearing it. You can wear your alternate up to three times. They're wearing these twice. So also puts out, are they going to wear the black jerseys time this year?
That's the thing. I'd imagine they're going to do one game all black, but I don't think Christmas, the black helmets are allowed, because
no, the black helmets are not allowed. They'd have to wear the green.
Yeah. Because they didn't pass the rule, or at least I'm not aware of.
No, they don't have three helmets.
An extra alternate helmet, which is absolutely just stupid, because it's like, you just passed this rule for a alternate helmet. It's like, why not have an extra one? Like, it's so, makes no sense. Way more complex than it should be, and that's just the NFL for you.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's funny, you know, you're looking at all of this, and then of course, you look at the pro shop opening at 9 a.m. in the line. It just shows you the dedication with the fans and how much they love the Kelly Green and want the Kelly Green back. The one thing that this does suck is some fans are getting emails saying that their orders have been canceled and stuff like that. That's
no way.
Yeah. There's been some that, like, for Fanatics that were canceling the orders, which kind of sucks for some of the fans who
yeah,
were ordering when online.
When I ordered my Jalen Hurts rookie jersey, I think it came out like maybe a little bit, like a month after he got drafted. And I ordered it, I'm going to say like end of May or something like that. And it didn't come until October. So I think this is what's going to happen with these jerseys. There's going to be like a little bit of a gap.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. I don't get it. But whenever there's like a new jersey that drops, there's always like a delay. And people are saying how some of their orders are expected like end of September, beginning of October.
Yeah.
So
I did see that. Now, the other thing is there, I think like certain players, there's a group of players they're dropping now. Then there's a group of players that they're dropping next. So I know they had Mailata, they had Hurts, Devontae, AJ, but and Reddick, they had Dawkins there, stuff like that. But my thing is, in the player that I'm going to get, I want to get a BG one. Brandon Graham, you know, he's going to be the longest tenured Eagle this year. Mm-hmm. He's going to be tied with Chuck Benarek. If he plays 11 games, he's going to be the most Eagles with the most games played ever, beating out the 188 mark of David Akers. So there's a lot there. And of course, you know, he follows All About the Birds page. He's a great person, you know, really good player. He's an all-time Philadelphia Eagle. I think that's the player that I'm going to go with just because, you know, he's an all-time Eagle. And you just, to me, you can't go wrong. I don't want to get a player that, not saying like these others, like Jalen and Devontae and AJ and all these other guys. But the thing is, you get a Brandon Graham. It's almost like that. When you got it at the end of, you know, Dawkins' career, when you got a Dawkins jersey, or last couple of years he was with the Eagles, you got a Dawkins jersey. No matter what you wear it, it's Dawkins. It's not like,
yeah.
And that's one thing. And that's why I want to get BG.
Yeah, BG. He's just like an Eagles legend. Like, and there's a reason why they used him for the reveals, because he's like, the way his career went was just exactly what Philly is. Like,
yeah,
he somewhat underwhelms, and then he hears the noise, he hears the criticism, and then he absolutely just rises to the scene. And now here he is, what, 34, going on 35, dude had a career high in sacks last year. Like, BG is just, he's an all-time bird, and I'm glad he's here to experience this, because he wasn't drafted yet when they had him last, right? He was like, what, 2 years, drafted 2 years later?
For when?
The Kelly Green. Last time they wore
them. No, he's the last player to he 2010. He was drafted in 2010. Right. He wore
in 2010
that Kelly Green, and he's gonna wear this one, which is it's pretty funny. It's pretty crazy, actually.
It's hard to do, man. It's hard to play for a team for 10 plus years in this league. A lot of you know, adversity. A lot of tough decisions have to be made from a team, and there's speculation of him leaving this offseason, but he's sticking around. So,
yep. No, it's, you know, I just think they hit this out of the park. I know the elite version, which is the ones that all the players are wearing, the one that's the most expensive. That's dropping soon, I guess. But no, it's what I like is now with Kelly Green as their alternate now, they can release a lot more stuff. Now, you don't have to go to Mitchell and Ness always or other sites to get, you know, retro Eagle stuff. So now the Eagles, like, they showed the sideline gear that they're going to wear and stuff like that. Like, it's, there's more options there to get the Kelly Green and to bring that. And I think it's, to me, it's huge. And I think it needs to be part of the uniform rotation. I don't think it needs to be the full-time uniform. I know people said that. I don't agree with that. They won in the midnight green. The midnight green, I love that color. That's forever. I grew up as a fan of the Eagles in the late 90s, early 2000s. It's midnight green. I love the black jerseys too. So hopefully they keep them as just wear those once a year. Because I do like that. But the Kelly Green, I don't think needs to be the full time, but if you have it as an alternate and you can always wear it every year, I like that aspect as well.
I feel like when you have such a high demand of like a jersey like this, I feel as if like, there's a reason for it. And it's like, maybe you shouldn't have like change. Like if it's not broke, don't fix it. And like these Kelly Greens, like there's a reason why we went 10 years like asking for them back. They're a very aesthetically pleasing look. I personally, this is hot take, but like I don't love the midnight green. I think it's just like meh. Like I don't love the numbers font. It's just, yes, it's obviously what we grew up watching, but it doesn't pop and shine. Do you like the same swagger, I guess you want to say, as the Kelly Greens do? And I mean, they're never gonna go back to switching to Kelly Green full time unless there's a wicked like demand for it. But I would love to see them worn at least more than twice a year, but I also like the blacks as well. So can't have all yeah, things.
And, you know, my one thing is, you know, Nike in general, I'm not a huge fan of their jerseys. I like the Reebok. The Reebok Midnight Green was a little bit different shade, different color. The Nike is different, of course, you know, the material of that. But when you look at the jerseys and buying the jerseys, I'm not going with like for my birthday, I got a Jalen Hurts, the limited it's called. And it was the $175 version. And I got it. Like I get every jersey. I got it. I did not like the fit. I thought the fit was terrible. I didn't like it at all.
The fit's not great.
I sent it back. Now, what I was seeing, because I saw like side by side pictures, because everyone going there, there were some that were 175.
Yeah, I saw.
There were some that were 130.
Comparison.
Yeah, the 130 I think is the jersey that I would get. It's the, you know, what used to be the screen print version of back when I was a kid, and you get the Reebok with the screen print everything. I think that's what I would go, unless I were to somehow go and then just get the elite version, which is what you see the players wearing there. But I don't know. There's just something about, to me, there's something about older, authentic Reebok jerseys and the starter jerseys back in the late 90s and Mitchell and Ness jerseys. I just think those are more for the fan. They're a little bit bigger. You can wear a sweatshirt underneath it, stuff like that. I think the Nike really can't. I think it, I don't like the material, but again, that's just me. They're not going to stop doing that. Nike's the outfitter for the uniforms and everything, but like for me, I'm going with the $130 version because I don't like the 175, especially putting it on, feeling it, wearing it.
I think some teams need Reebok and some teams can't have Reebok. I think the Packers, great look with Reebok. In my personal opinion, don't love the Eagles with Reebok. I think the Nike looks are better, but there's other teams I can't think of now. I think the Ravens, they have a pretty solid, I would imagine they have a solid Reebok look. Just the older jerseys kind of give like a vintage, obviously, look. And so I feel like Reebok, since that was what was the older brand with these jerseys, it would make more sense. But I think Nike did a pretty good job. It was way overdue. They couldn't get the template for it for so long. I don't know. It made no sense, but I'm glad that they finally were able to master it.
No, I just the other thing, when you look at all these retro jerseys, I love every, you know, Houston with the Tennessee with the Houston Oiler look. You have the Eagles. You have all these the Vikings doing from like the 1970s, you know, plain but, you know, crisp. Love the look. I love all these jerseys coming back. You know, I like the Dolphins, the old Dolphin. I think that needs to be their primary look. The Jets doing their look. You know, I like all these throwbacks to come back and have teams wear it a couple times a year. I think I like it too because it kind of reminds me of my childhood and being a kid and being younger and seeing this. It kind of brings you back to that.
Very nostalgic.
That nostalgic feel. Yeah. So again, that's why I want the Sixers to bring back the Iverson blacks.
I think some teams need to like, not need to, but I think like the Eagles, the Seahawks, what up, Jose? who else is it? It was Eagles, Seahawks, and there's one other team who I thought killed their throwbacks. The Seahawks, like, I think those got to be their full time. Like, it's one of their Christmas looks I've ever seen in a long time. Like, the blue jerseys, silver lids, silver pants, it's a clean look. Like, Eagles color green, like, clean look. There's one more team. Who else had throwbacks?
I think that
Bucks.
Yeah, the Bucks.
Theirs was, they killed it. I think those are the jerseys that need to be full time, but never going to see it. But they're just so good. It's like, oh, I wish they would.
Yeah, no, I love what some of those teams have done. Some of the teams have absolutely whiffed. When you look at all the jerseys they put out, you know, big time whiff. But like, and even teams now that I think they need to go back. And, you know, when you look at a team like the Titans, I think the Titans need to go back to what they wore, like when they went to the Super Bowl and in the early 2000s and stuff like that. I think some of the teams go above and beyond. You know, there's a great on Twitter. It's NFL fashion advice.
Yeah, he's cool. He's funny.
Yeah.
He's very relatable.
Funny stuff. He's got some great, great posts, everything along the lines of that. But just when you look at all of these teams and what they're doing with their, you know, their throwbacks, these extra, you know, this extra jersey, extra helmet, they're able to do some of these things. I think it's great because also it puts more revenue into the league because, you know, your fans are buying the gear. Fans are buying. Look at the Eagles. You know, they line up 4 or 5 in the morning for a place to open up at 9 o'clock, over 1,000 people to get in line to go and, you know, get the Kelly Green jerseys. I think it's huge when you look at also making money too.
Yeah, I think so. Last off season when the Eagles dropped the new watermark, I thought that was very interesting for different purposes. I thought maybe my original thought was they would just transition to Kelly Green full time because it's hard to see the new watermark on those jerseys. Are they going to do it this year? You know,
well, the new watermark is not on the jerseys. It's the old watermark still, which I think is 100 times better than the new watermark.
So that's what I'm saying. That's very interesting. It's like, why are they changing the watermark? Are they planning on like making a jersey change? Because you would think that like if you're gonna change that watermark, you would put it on the jerseys. So to me, it's like, it seems like there could be a little foreshadowing of like a jersey change.
So I've heard the old font is coming back. Now,
really,
when they play at home, the old font should be the end zones, which hopefully, because when you looked at those previous years when they wore those Kelly Greens, it was the old font in the end zones, and the end zones were gray within the bird logo in the middle. I'm guessing that's what you're going to see, because that's what they wore. I've been told that. Don't know about the gray end zones, but the old font is definitely should be a part of that. So again, that's something to keep an eye out. I do know with the uniform aspect, the new watermark wasn't going to be on the uniforms. They said it last year until 2024. So we'll have to look at this next offseason and see. I don't know. I haven't heard anyone that really likes the new font over the old font. I know we can get used to it, but the old font was so much better. It's so much.
Yeah, I honestly don't mind it. It honestly kind of grew on me, but it's because it's more of like a modern slick look. Obviously, when it first drops, it's like, ew, what is this? Like the old one's so like more pleasing to the eye, and it's giving like getting basic if the new one is. But I kind of like it in the end zones more than I did the other one.
Yeah, I don't know. I
just because it filled up the end zones more. With the old one, it was kind of like a little congested, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it was a more compact word mark. I know. I understand that. I don't like the new watermark, but again, that's just me. I don't run the team, nor do I have the finances to run the team. So what I say really doesn't matter when it comes to that kind of stuff. I can just give my opinion, and maybe someone listens, maybe someone doesn't. But before we leave, I am going to do a fun little game that I started with Chip the last couple of weeks. Chip got both questions wrong last week.
Who was it last week? I didn't tune in.
Well, it's Name That Philadelphia Eagle, it's called.
Yeah. No. But who was it? I didn't know the first one, to be honest.
Yeah, the Reggie White and Eric Allen. That was that one. He got Eric Allen. He didn't get Reggie White. And then, honestly,
was Eric Allen the first one?
It was Eric Allen interception and a safety in the same in a playoff game. So did those whatever. I forget the second question, but also the hard question I had. The second one I had was name the player that Donovan McNabb threw his first touchdown pass to for his playoff career. So his first in the 2000 wild card game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Little Kendall.
I'm cooked. Were you even born yet? Young back then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. See, I'm making you younger than you are. But it was Nate Brown. McNabb ran a touchdown, was his first touchdown in his playoff career. The touchdown pass was to Nate Brown. And then Jeff Thomason was the other touchdown pass. But he didn't get either of those correct. The hard one that I had was name the Philadelphia Eagle who played with the Eagles, caught passes from three different Philadelphia Eagle quarterbacks, but only caught two career catches.
This is one from last week or this one now?
Yeah, this is from last week.
Okay.
And it was Brian Finneran from the Atlanta Falcons. He played 8 years with the Atlanta Falcons. I did have someone actually guess that correct. So
wow.
I try not to give too much information because with Google and everything, they just try to look something up. But I'm going to play the intro and then we're going to give Kendall two easy and medium question. And then we'll get a hard one.
Here.
Name that
Philadelphia Eagle.
So the easy question on Name That Philadelphia Eagle is back in 2010, the last time the Eagles wore Kelly Green, who was the original starting quarterback in that game?
Kevin Cobb, right?
It was Kevin Cobb, correct. It was Kevin Cobb. He did get a concussion and Michael Vick came in and he had one of his best seasons of his pro career.
Can you imagine if we were in a situation where Kevin Cobb was our quarterback right now? Not necessarily him, but God, so glad Jalen Hurts is our quarterback. Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, that game was, had the Leonard Weaver end of his, career-ending injury. You had Stuart Bradley, unfortunately, really was almost the end of him too. And then, of course, the Kevin Cobb thing. But, so the medium question. This one kind of would be easy, but the medium question. Back in 2011, this was. Maybe I think a couple days ago, it was the anniversary of the Eagles signing Nnamdi Asamoah, that big contract. They get the prize free agent. This free agency started later because of the lockout. The day before that, the Eagles made an acquisition. Can you tell me what that trade was for a defender? I'll give you the team too, with the Arizona Cardinals.
Wow, I feel like when you say it, I'm going to be pissed off.
I think you may. So I'm going to give you
give me a hint of the position
after I give you some suspenseful music. Ooh. It's like you're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, except for you don't win any money. I'll give you a hint.
Wait, Cardinal defender.
Yes,
I definitely know him, right?
Goes by. Yeah, you'll definitely know him. He only played, I think he played two seasons with the Eagles.
Was he a corner?
He was on the defensive side of the ball. I'm not going to give you everything. The player he was traded for went to the University of Houston. Drafted in the second round.
This is going to be a bad guess. because I think the Eagles signed this guy rather than traded for him. But Jason Babin
is not the answer. It is Dominique Rogers Cromartie, who was traded for Kevin Cobb. Dude.
Yeah. He, duh.
I tied both together.
I was on track with my defensive back corner guess.
Damn.
No,
I
didn't
see that. I got one more question, right or no?
You want another question? I'll give you another one.
Yeah, I gotta get my redemption.
You have to write your wrong.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, give me a different one.
Here's another medium one for you. In 2004, the Eagles in the NFC Championship beat the Atlanta Falcons. Their starting tight end Chad Lewis were to break his foot, and he would no longer be able to play in the Super Bowl. Which tight end did the Eagles sign to play in the Super Bowl, who had originally played for Andy Reid in two different stops?
Are you saying that year?
That year. So Chad Lewis gets hurt. I know you're too young, aren't you?
Cooked, buddy. Cooked.
I mentioned his name earlier. See, it's...
Cooked.
Jeff Thomason.
Ah, right.
I mentioned it earlier. That's why I brought that one up, because I happened to say it earlier. So it's a fun little game. Question. What?
There's not a hard question. Just an easy medium.
Well, there is a hard question, but I'll say the hard question. You don't answer it on here. You can answer
it.
Okay. And then I usually post the hard question. Actually, the Chad Lewis one was going to be my hard question. So I'll have to just come up with one on the spot and just see if somebody can get it. It shouldn't be that. It's not going to be like a super, super hard question, but the Eagles, of course, brought back the Kelly Green. And the last, you know, the big iconic player you see wearing the Kelly Green is Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham wore number 12. Now, there was a player in the Midnight Green. So the number 12 was given out when Andy Reid was the head coach. A player did wear number 12 twice.
Twice.
So both different positions. So 1999, and I believe in 2000. And then from then on, the number was not given out anymore. So again, the number 12, which is iconic with Randall Cunningham in the Kelly Greens, that number 12 is basically nobody has worn it since the preseason of two players wearing it in preseason in 99 and in 2000. Name those two Philadelphia Eagles. Again,
I'm gonna let the fans take this one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it is tough. I just thought I went off top of my head because I had the hard one, but I gave that one to you again. But with that, of course, it brings another episode of AT Birds Weekly Report to an end. We will, of course, be back next week. Going to talk some birds, training camp in high gear, preseason games coming shortly as well. So lots to talk about with the season right around the corner. So many different things coming. The one thing I do want to bring up is Philly sports trips. If you want to go to see any of the games that they have, but we are running two bus trips. We are running it to New York on October 15th, and we are running it to the October 29th again in Washington. Now, we were in Washington last year, but so if you want to go, take a look at phillysportstrips.com. You can get, if you live in the Lehigh Valley area, we have an Allentown pickup. So definitely sign up for one of those trips. We will be there. It's going to be a fun time. It was awesome last year in Washington. Couldn't have had a better time with everything that Vince and the guys over there at Philly Sports Ships do. They do such a great job with the tailgate, with the transportation, the tickets, getting everything organized. Everything is, you know, A plus rated when you look at, you know, bus trips and tailgating and everything that they do. Hollis Thomas will be there, a friend of the show. So definitely sign up if you want to join us. You can just put your $99 deposit, secure your spot, and then pay the rest at a later date. But definitely, if you're in the Lehigh Valley area or close to the Lehigh Valley area, definitely hit the All About the Birds on the, when you sign up, there should be a spot on the bottom there that you can click that to make sure you get the Allentown pickup. So any other questions, you can always contact myself or Jeff, who's also a part. He'll definitely give you information as well. But definitely join us on one of those trips. It's going to be a fun time.
I would definitely be suggesting going to the New York Jets one, because that's going to be a big game. And that's what, week five, right?
It is week five.
Six? Five, yeah. No.
I think it's week five. Week five or six.
Jets have never beaten the Eagles. So I have a feeling that might be first loss comes to the Birds.
It's going to be a good game. That is absolutely for sure. But with that, always a very happy and joyful Go Birds.
Go Birds.
This is Matt Ware. Hey, for all the Eagle content you need, go follow All About the Birds. They do a damn thing. Check them out.
Hey, Eagles fans. I may be in Tampa, but I know where to find the best Eagles content out there. Check out my friends at All About the Birds.
Philadelphia, what's up? This is your boy Freddie Mitchell, a.k.a. Fred X. It's All About the Birds.
All birds all the time. All birds all the time.
All About the Birds provides you with weekly analysis, game recaps, informative interviews, and it's all birds all the time.